Welcome to HN Pod, the daily podcast where we dive into the top stories and the most fascinating comment threads from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Thanks for joining us for episode 471. Today we are looking back at the biggest stories from yesterday, July 28th, 2026. We have got a really packed show today. We are covering a massive 7.1 earthquake in Japan, a potential breakthrough in HIV vaccines, a major pushback against digital IDs in Europe, why writers need to stop treating Substack as their permanent home, and a new open source security tool from OpenAI.
Let us jump right into the first story. A 7.1 magnitude earthquake hit Japan, specifically in the Kyushu and Kumamoto regions. This one shot right to the top of Hacker News with nearly 800 points, and the comment section essentially became a real-time open-source intelligence feed.
Yeah, it really did. A user named NumPad0 was aggregating reports from NHK and other local sources. The impact is significant. We are talking collapsed bridges, dozens hospitalized, and major manufacturing disruptions. TSMC, Sony, and Fujifilm all had to evacuate their chip, imager, and materials plants in the area.
Which, of course, immediately sparked conversations about the global supply chain. You build these highly sensitive, multi-billion dollar fabs in a region known for seismic activity, and there is always going to be risk. But as one commenter pointed out, Japan has the R&D and the major buyers right there. You cannot just evacuate 100 million people or completely abandon the industrial base. It's actually one of the main reasons we've seen such a big push to build secondary sites in places like Arizona over the last few years.
Exactly. But what I found really fascinating was the discussion about how people actually get their disaster alerts in Japan. Someone mentioned that their first notification came from the Nerve app. For the anime fans out there, yes, it is named after the organization from Neon Genesis Evangelion. It actually started as a fan Twitter account during the 2011 Tohoku earthquake and was so fast and accurate that it eventually became an official, real disaster information service. The IP owners even agreed to let them keep using the branding.
That is such a classic internet story. One commenter mentioned how surreal the app is because you can literally get the alert, watch the shockwave moving outward from the epicenter on your screen, and then physically feel the ground shake as the wave hits you.
Incredible technology. But there was also a darker side to the infrastructure discussion. There was a report of an explosion at an Aeon shopping mall following the evacuation, which commenters tracked down to likely being a gas leak in the food court. This kicked off a massive debate about piped gas versus electricity.
Right. Someone said that 100 years from now, people are going to be absolutely flabbergasted that we just piped highly flammable gas everywhere all the time, especially when electricity allows for so many automatic safeguards.
But the pushback from the folks living in Japan was really interesting. They pointed out that while there has been a push for all-electric homes, adoption is slow because of cooking culture. Traditional Japanese cookware like clay donabe pots just do not work on induction stoves. And apparently, the Japan Society of Cookery Science even did a study showing people preferred the taste of food cooked on gas. It is a perfect example of how deep cultural habits can slow down infrastructure transitions, even when there are obvious safety benefits.
Moving from infrastructure to biotech, our next story is about a new HIV vaccine that is showing unprecedented success in a preclinical study. This is a really complex topic, but the Hacker News community did a fantastic job breaking it down.
They really did. The core problem with HIV is that it is incredibly sneaky. It evades our antibodies by tricking the immune system into generating responses for fake decoy targets. By the time the immune system figures it out, the virus has already mutated.
So the traditional one-and-done vaccine approach just does not work here. Instead, this new approach uses what they call germline targeting. As one commenter perfectly described it, it is basically a curriculum for the immune system. You give a series of shots, and each one is slightly different, targeting a different stage of B-cell development.
I loved the analogy someone made to port knocking in network security. It's like you poke this one thing to enable a rule set, then poke another thing in that new state to open the next rule set, and so on, until you finally guide that one in a million B-cell to mutate into the exact version that can attack the real effective target on the HIV virus.
It is a brilliant bit of biological engineering, and it led to this great philosophical discussion about the everyday arms race happening inside our bodies. There's this concept mentioned in the comments called original antigenic sin. Basically, if your immune system gets primed the wrong way by a random pathogen, it can lock on to the wrong recipe for antibodies.
That is why some people get the flu really bad every year, while others just naturally fight it off.
It also explains why it's so hard to make a universal flu vaccine. And someone else pointed out that this curriculum approach is exactly how a lot of modern personalized cancer vaccines are being developed right now. They sequence your specific tumor and then develop custom RNAs to train your immune system step by step to eliminate it. It's just amazing to see how much cross-pollination there is between network security concepts, machine learning, and modern immunology.
Absolutely. Speaking of security and networks, let us shift gears to our third story. It is a European citizens' initiative titled Stop Killing the Internet, No Digital ID and No Age Verification. This one got over 500 points and generated a very heated debate.
The context here is that there are ongoing pushes in the EU to mandate digital IDs or age verification to access certain parts of the internet, ostensibly to protect children. But the technical community is throwing up massive red flags.
Because, as any engineer knows, if you build a system that requires a digital ID to access the web, you're building a system of total and absolute surveillance. One user named AtmosX pointed out that a lot of engineers treat this like a joke, thinking kids will just bypass it like it is 1995. But they warned that modern governments can make these systems borderline impossible to bypass, giving them absolute control over who sees what at any given time.
And you know, the comments got pretty intense. Someone argued that if you trust your government, giving the police more power doesn't look like a dystopia. They shared a story about German police raiding the wrong apartment, but being polite about it. But the pushback was immediate. The consensus was basically, sure, maybe things are fine now, but what happens when different, less reasonable people gain power?
Right. The problem with building a turnkey surveillance state is that you cannot guarantee who will be holding the keys in 10 or 20 years.
So what is the alternative? One commenter suggested that instead of policing the entire internet and forcing adults to hand over their IDs, we should just make kids-only hardware and kids-only networks. If a kid has a device that can access the open internet, treat it like giving them a beer.
Which sounds logical, but then another user brought up the reality of YouTube Kids. Even in a walled garden, the auto-suggestion rabbit holes can lead to some incredibly weird and disturbing territory very quickly. There are no easy technical fixes for what is essentially a societal parenting problem. But the overwhelming sentiment on Hacker News is that sacrificing the privacy and anonymity of the entire adult population is definitely not the right trade-off.
That theme of ownership and control actually ties perfectly into our next story. It is a blog post by Elizabeth Tai called Substack Writers, You Need a Website.
This is a battle as old as the internet, the classic tenant versus homeowner debate. Elizabeth's argument is that Substack is a great distribution tool, but it should not be your digital home. If your URL is something.substack.com, you do not own your audience. You are just a digital sharecropper.
She advocates for the posse method: publish on your own site, syndicate elsewhere. It is an old indie web philosophy. Your personal domain should be the definitive source of truth, and you just use platforms like Substack, X, or LinkedIn as distribution pipes.
She used the sci-fi author John Scalzi as an example. He has been blogging on his own domain for 28 years straight. Because he owns his space, his digital footprint is unbroken by the rise and fall of different social networks. He just points his social media followers back to his own site.
But Hacker News never just accepts an article at face value. A user named Simon Saris pushed back hard in the comments. He argued that lumping Substack's features together as just convenience is completely missing the point. Substack solved distribution, community, and most importantly, getting paid. He said those floating social network spaces are valuable because they have genuine utility.
Which sparked a great debate about what genuine utility actually means. Is a platform big because it is actually the best tool, or is it just entrenched network effects? One commenter argued that social networks are like cartels. They offer great utility at the beginning to capture the market, and then they slowly turn the screws, close off interoperability, and rent seek forever.
We have seen it happen with Facebook, Twitter, Reddit. It is the classic enshittification cycle. But at the same time, you cannot deny that building an audience from scratch on a standalone WordPress site today is incredibly difficult. You are basically shouting into the void. So the posse method really does seem like the best compromise. Let Substack handle the emails and the payments, but make sure you have a custom domain plugged into it so you can pack up and leave when the corporate landlord inevitably changes the rules.
Exactly. Always own your domain name. All right, our final story today is a launch from OpenAI. They just open-sourced Codex Security, which is a CLI and TypeScript SDK for finding, validating, and fixing security vulnerabilities in your code.
It is designed to scan repositories, review pull requests, and run security checks right in your CI pipeline. It requires a ChatGPT sign-in or an OpenAI API key. It got a solid amount of attention, but the comment section took a wild and very entertaining turn.
It really did. So Michael, one of the co-founders of PromptFu, who has been working on this tool at OpenAI, jumped into the thread. He thanked everyone for checking it out, asked for feedback, and then dropped a link saying they are hiring for a full-stack software engineer for cybersecurity.
And that is when the thread completely derailed. A user clicked the job link and complained that the requirements were way too vague. The job description just asked for experience shipping production full-stack products. The user went on a rant about how companies like OpenAI have these incredibly vague job postings, which leads to arbitrary hiring decisions, where dozens of people pass the technical bar, but the final choice is just based on vibes or cultural fit.
It is a really common frustration in tech right now, but the counter-arguments were fascinating. Several people pointed out that for highly competitive companies, vague requirements are actually a feature, not a bug. They do not care if you know a specific software package or the exact intricacies of PCI compliance. They want raw intelligence and high conscientiousness.
One person said, "The goal is to talk to a candidate for 30 minutes and walk away thinking, wow, this person can do anything we need them to do, and they can probably tell us what we should be building next." If you have a track record of getting things done, the specific stock just does not matter.
Though someone else joked that security is the one place where you probably do want some specific knowledge. You don't want a raw genius deciding to store social security numbers in a plain text file because they have never dealt with compliance before. But overall, it was just a classic Hacker News moment. A major AI company drops a cool new open source security tool, and the community spends half the time debating the philosophy of technical hiring.
Never change Hacker News. And that brings us to the end of today's episode. From earthquakes and immune system curriculums to digital sovereignty and the quirks of tech hiring, it was a fantastic day of discussions.
Thank you so much for tuning into HN Pod. If you enjoyed the show, make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back tomorrow to break down the next batch of top stories. Until then, keep building and own your domain names.
See you tomorrow, everyone.